Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Okay, we are back this weekend on our show, and the conference realignment conversation continues, and one of the teams that has been at the forefront nationally is Texas A&M and their impending move to the SEC. I'm certainly looking forward to our next conversation, getting his thoughts on all the complexities in college football. Plus, we're going to take time to preview the Aggies, their big matchup with those Oklahoma State Cowboys on Saturday. Always a pleasure to welcome in our source for Texas A&M, the all-time winningest coach, the great R.C. Slocum, and a guy that, you know, that's been out of the business for a while. You've not slowed down one bit. What in the world were you doing in Arkansas this week, R.C.?
Well, this time of year, throughout the South, they have touchdown clubs. I actually did one in San Antonio recently. I did one in Daytona Beach, Florida recently. And I got one in Knoxville, Tennessee coming up. And people get together, fans from different universities get together. It's really a neat deal. You might go to Daytona and you've got Florida State people, Georgia people, Florida people, Miami people, and they get together once a week, normally honor local high school coaches and or players. They talk about the previous week's college games and the upcoming games, and they bring in speakers. And I really enjoy seeing football people from around the country and people talking about the game. So I've done that for several years now, and it keeps me involved with the fans of the game and the coaches in different areas. When I was in Arkansas, Coach Brawls was there and Kenny Hatfield.
Oh, yeah.
I got to hook up with some old friends there and relive some of the great games that we had with the University of Arkansas.
I was going to say, was it a homecoming of sorts, kind of reminiscing about those days in the Southwest Conference?
It was, and I go way back with those guys. I told the story with Coach Brawls, one of the great breaks in my coaching career, and it's always interesting how lives kind of wander around and things come into your life. I was coaching in high school in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and we got spring break, but instead of going fishing or taking off and playing golf or doing something, I wanted to try to learn more football. I was young, fired up by coach. So
sure.
One of the better programs in college football at that time was Arkansas, and Coach Brawls was the coach. And I had a friend there named Don Bro, who later spent all those years at the Redskins with Joe Gibbs. And Don was my only contact in college football. So I called Don and said, can I come up and visit you during your spring training? And so this was in the spring of 1968 or 69. And so I went up there and spent several days with Don and met Coach Brawls for the first time and watched their practices, sit in on their meetings. And at the same time I was there, there were three other friends of Don's who he had worked with at Florida State that had come to visit him. They were at that time at Kansas State. And during that, we spent three or four days together. Not long after that, they had an opening for a graduate assistant. And I got a chance to get into college coaching and go to Kansas State, but it all started there at Arkansas. So it was kind of, I talked to Coach Brawls about that, you know, meeting him was such a great honor, you know, years ago, and then we've gotten to be friends over the years and coached against each other, and he's someone I really respect.
Did you guys kind of preview, as we look ahead, of course, you know, the big matchup, what, here at Cowboys Stadium, October 1st, between the Aggies and, of course, Arkansas?
We talked about that a little bit. We've got a big game this week with Oklahoma State, which is a huge challenge for us. Arkansas goes to play at Alabama. So we both got our hands full, and neither one of these coaching staffs or players or fans, I would suppose, are spending too much time right now thinking about Arkansas. They're thinking about Alabama and Oklahoma State.
Right. I don't want to get ahead. Stay in the moment. You are listening to the voice of R.C. Slocum. Of course, needs no introduction. The winningest coach in A&M history, never had a losing season, won four conference championships, and we definitely wanted him to weigh in on all this conference expansion and Texas A&M, their big move to the SEC, and really it is a seismic shift with the Aggies as you guys are going to be heading off. I have to wonder, R.C., are you excited about, you know, heading to such a strong conference and the structure of it? And I know some folks are saying, you know, how's this all going to play out for A&M? Will they really be able to survive in that conference? But I think they're going to blend in nicely with the culture and with so many of those institutions because the values are the same.
You know, it's one of those huge, big, bold moves, and it's like everything else in life. You never know for sure, you know, what lies down the road, but you try to gather in. This is not a knee-jerk thing. It's not something that we're doing in reaction to something else that someone else did. This was something that I think our administration, our president, our board, our AD, looked at for the long haul, and college football has constantly been evolving, going back to the days when there was the NCAA television committee, and they kind of determined around the country which teams would be on TV. And then later, Oklahoma and Georgia sued the NCAA back in the early 80s, arguing that they should own their own rights, their individual rights, and they won that suit. So after that time, each school had the right to do what they wanted to with their TV rights. Not long after that, conferences start saying, well, what if we all get together in the, for example, the Southeastern Conference, let's pool our rights and go to the networks. And at that time, ESPN was coming along, and there were more networks. Fox was growing, and so there were options to go pool your rights. And so that was another evolution. As time went on, the next evolution was several of those conferences getting together and saying, what if we form the BCS, and we'll enter into deals, you know, as a group and have bowl games. And so I think it's just a constant, ongoing changing deal. And we had an opportunity to look down the road and see where in the world of a changing college landscape, where would we be best positioned to whatever happens, that we would be in a good position. There is no doubt the competition will be very keen. The Southeastern Conference has won four of the past immediate past five college championships. So we know it's tough, but what normally happens, my experience from a lifelong career in athletics, is if you've made out of the right stuff, you rise to the level of the competition. And competition brings out the best in an individual, in a player, in a coach, or in an institution.
In your opinion, what do you think are going to be some of the advantages of this move? It was interesting. You know, I was reading online somewhere that the LSU chancellor, Michael Martin, he was pretty excited about just kind of that little rivalry that's gone on perhaps throughout the years between Texas A&M and LSU.
A fairly long history with LSU and with Arkansas. And there's a reason for that history because of the proximity of those states. There's quite a number of people with Texas backgrounds and A&M backgrounds that have move for whatever reasons, business reasons, to Louisiana and to Arkansas.
Like yourself?
And yeah, and then there's quite a number of people with ties in those states who have moved to Texas. There are a large number of in the particular North Texas area, a lot of Arkansas fans. You can see when we play them up there in Cowboys Stadium, there's a big turnout of Arkansas fans that come to that game. A lot of them live in North Texas, and we've got the same thing in the Houston area, Southeast Texas area, with LSU fans. And our world, people talk about the local rivalries, which we like and you know, have been really proud to be a part of. But our world is so much smaller now. You know, when I grew up in Orange, Texas, we had one TV channel, and you might see the game of the week or something. Now you can flip that TV dial. You watch teams all over the country, and kids watch teams all over the country with cable television. And so our world now, I think, is much smaller than what it once was. And so this will give A&M additional exposure across you know, South Carolina, Atlanta, places. And we have a large number of graduates that live in Atlanta and live throughout the South. So you know, it's like all change. You know, change involves, there's some things that you'd like to hold on to, and there's some unknowns out there. But our people, our administration, looked at all the aspects, and we just felt like, you know, that we'd be best suited to be in a league where everybody kind of is, the league is set up for some equality and support, where each member supports the other members of the league, and there's you know, so some of those things were attractive to us.
Absolutely. You know, well thought out, as you're saying, a methodical process. I have to ask you, though, how much are you going to miss that longstanding rivalry, you know, when Thanksgiving rolls around and not getting to play the University of Texas?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that have yet to be determined. You know, we'll miss playing all those teams. I'm sure, you know, that just like the old Southwest Conference, you know, we had some great times, you know, over the years. Going up to Fort Worth was a core trip, and the core marched down the streets of Fort Worth, and we enjoyed doing that. We had some great games and long-standing rival with Rice and played them, and you know, great academic school. And I remember being down there one time when their band was kind of, you know, one of those bands, off-the-wall bands. They always did some
yeah.
things. But one year they had something where they did something during the game. Of course, coaches at halftime are in the locker room, you know, working away. But they did something at the halftime, I think, that made fun of Reveille or something. Well, I come out after getting dressed after the game, and the Corps Cadets has the whole Rice Stadium surrounded. They're not going to let the band out. So we have some great situations going back, but things change, you know. And, you know, at one time, you know, I think years ago, I think Oklahoma State might have been in the same league with A&M or something, you know.
Well, yeah. And we're certainly grieving, you know, being an Oklahoma Sooner, you know, the longstanding rivalry between Nebraska. I hope that at some point that'll be back on the schedule and we'll be able to see that.
Those are great games. So time goes on, and only time will tell what the results of all those things are.
I'm curious, R.C., of course, you coached in the Southwest Conference, the Big 12. Do you ever have like a stopping moment and imagine what would it have been like to have coached against, you know, teams in the SEC? Because as you said, I mean, a tremendous opportunity to play against the premier football league in the country.
Well, you know, I got to spend some time coaching against Arkansas and LSU. And during my career, it was not highly publicized, but there were a couple of occasions, one in particular, when Joe Dean was the AD at LSU, that I was approached about going down there. But, you know, I spent my whole life in Texas. I moved here when I was about a year old. So I knew that. I recognized that was a great job and a great opportunity. But I'd been at A&M too long and was too maroon at that time to change. But I do have a great respect for the game of football, and I think, you know, one of the things that I really believe about this, and I should clarify that this hasn't really happened.
Right,
correct. We've announced what our intentions are, and the SEC has certainly offered us a spot there, so none of this has really happened, but it is something that's in the works, and my comments are certainly all prefaced on the fact that this does go through. Like it's headed right now. I think it's our intention to do that, and we've announced that publicly, and so it's not done yet, and I recognize that, but I'm commenting as though responding to your question that if this all goes through, I think we'll have some great rivalries down there, and I think the people, you know, I'm proud of Texas A&M, our military heritage. I noticed last week at the game, you come in our stadium, something we've done forever. We put little miniature American flags all the way around the top of that stadium, and it's just beautiful.
That's great.
And I think that the traditions we have, I think our school will be respected going into the SEC and will be appreciated for what we are and the uniqueness of A&M. And, so we'll see what happens. Number one, if it happens at all, which I think it's going to, that's my own personal opinion. That's not an official statement at all, but it's my opinion from everything that I know that this thing at some point in time will take place.
We're learning more and more all about, you know, what will happen with the realignment, and I wanted you to kind of weigh in on this because we hear a lot about these schools, you know, they're only looking out for their best interest. There's so much greed right now in college athletics, but it does need to be pointed out, R.C., that we live in a time where it is continual. I mean, there's rising costs that these universities, they've got to generate more revenue. I mean, it's different than, you know, when I was in college 20 years ago, as far as, you know, the overall cost per scholarship, and then the continual change of upgrading facilities to be competitive and to be able to recruit the best student athletes.
You're exactly right. And let me say, we're not the only ones who have done this. You know, if you look around the country here in the last few weeks, in the Big East, a couple of their teams applied and were accepted to the Atlantic Coast. We've had other teams in the Big 12 actually over several years now have actually been exploring going to other leagues. We've had some of them that have had ongoing forays into other parts of the country and other leagues looking out to see what they could do and if they could better themselves. You know, so we're not the only ones. We're not unique in the fact that we said, you know, as we landscaped and looked around, other schools were looking out and trying to explore and see if they could maybe better themselves. And as you say, it's much like our own personal lives. All the costs, you know, groceries have gone up, fuel has gone up. And if you're in the business of educating 400, 500 college athletes, a lot of people don't realize these universities have to generate the money for the cost of attendance, for what a scholarship costs at A&M, for every scholarship athlete we have. We have to generate, raise that money, make that money, and give it to the school for those athletes for their education. And those costs go up. We hear all the time about the rising cost of education. Along with that, the cost to charter airplanes, the cost for your utilities, for your stadium, all those things go up. And we also, one of the things I'm really happy about that I think is very positive, we're providing more services to our athletes. We've got most major programs now have nutritionists that work with the athletes. They have special sure. needs. These, you know, your 350-pound guy, he has different needs in terms of nutrition than, say, just your normal college student. We have large numbers of female athletes that from time to time have issues with nutrition and eating and so forth. So we've got professionals to deal with that, and we're providing that as a service to the athletes. There's been a lot of attention about from an academic standpoint, and there was a time in college athletics when people joked about the class schedules and about the low graduation rates. We have done collectively, I'd say college sports have done a great job of addressing those issues. And one of the ways we did that is we provide these kids have very busy, demanding schedules with their athletic events and their practices and so forth. So we have really done a great job of providing support academically. We've got most schools that I know of. We've got at A&M a very nice athletic facility, academic facility that where kids go there. We've got nice study halls. You know, 25 years ago, there wasn't probably an athletic program in the country that had to buy computers for their athletes. And now we've got a big computer lab because if you're a college student, you have to have that. So that's a huge cost in itself of having buying the computers, having a place to put them, having someone to maintain them, and having someone to keep them with all the upgrades. So all of those costs, it is money. Now, I've heard people here in the last few weeks on the radio and whatever talk about the greed. You know, they portray this as the greed of these schools. And to me, I think you can say a lot of it is about money, but I think you can make the case that that's not necessarily greed. It's trying to do what – it's not like these schools are stockpiling big piles of money and investing in it. You know, most schools are barely getting by in their athletic programs.
Well, you know, and you have to factor in as well that the football programs, they're supporting so many of these non-revenue producing sports.
The reality in most programs is the men's basketball, if you've got a pretty good program, you hope to break even in men's basketball. If you're really good, you probably make a little bit in men's basketball. Baseball loses money. Track loses money, tennis loses money, golf loses money, swimming loses money. Go right on down the line, and then if you go back to the opposite side on the women's side, all those sports lose money too. So you say, where does that money come from? Football is the one that has to generate that money, and it's just the way college athletics are set up. And those programs are important. They're providing opportunities. We're proud of our women's softball program. We're proud of our equestrian team. We're proud of our men's tennis team, our men's golf team. All those things, we're proud of those, and they're great things, but they all cost money. So we're looking out ways of saying, how can we do things to enhance the experience for our athletes here and provide them the support that they deserve?
Having a compelling conversation with the former head coach at Texas A&M for 14 years, R.C. Slocum. And let's move ahead. Let's line it up on the gridiron, R.C. And the good news is the fact that the Aggies, they are 2-0 right now. You guys have had wins over SMU and Idaho. But a big game Saturday afternoon against Oklahoma State. Not going to be easy because when Mike Gundy comes to town, you know that he's going to have his guys ready to go. And they've got some great talent this year.
I've watched them for several years now. They're a very athletic team. They're well coached. and they've been a really explosive offensive team. But what gets overlooked, they play really sound defense, too. I've known Bill Young for a long time. Their defensive coordinator is one of the best guys in the game.
Sure.
And they line up and play, and I admire the way they play defense. But they put points on the board, very explosive. I think it's a good matchup because I see us as being the same way. I think our defense has improved dramatically over the last couple of years. I think we do a good sound. Our coach, Tim DeRuiter, is an excellent. Has really brought a lot to our program in terms of defense. But on offense, we've got, I think, a good offensive line. We've got excellent running backs. We've got big-time receivers. And our quarterback is really, someone that I'm impressed with. I think he's a good player. So as I look at these teams, I see both teams being similar. They both have very solid sound on defense. They play the special teams. They're athletic, so we've got good people on the special teams. And then they've got good quarterbacks, good receivers. So it should be a heck of a contest. And maybe that's why they're ranked 7 and 8 in the nation. They're ranked right there together. So this is one of those first big contests that we have this year for both teams. I'm saying it's one steps up and one steps back in this ball game.
You know, one of the things that confidence-wise you got to feel pretty good about is you were just complimenting the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. I mean, the fact that he is a senior, he's been in these situations, and so they look to be the favorite, obviously, you guys protecting home.
Well, I think, you know, looking at, for those that look at the point spreads and things, I think the game just has us a very slight favorite, and that says to me it's probably an even game, and we're getting a little bit of edge because we're playing at Kyle Field in front of the 12th man, and I do think that's a plus in our factor. Oklahoma State has a great home atmosphere. We had to play up there last year, but there is no doubt that the 12th man, the Aggie fan base, they create a really exciting atmosphere at Kyle Field, and that is a plus for our team.
R.C. Slocum has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, and we've kept you long, R.C. We always appreciate your time. And where are you off to next? Where can we keep our eye on you?
Well, I'm going to Knoxville, my next trip out of town, to speak to the Knoxville Touchdown Club. So that should be fun, too.
Well, safe travels, and hopefully we'll see you in Arlington here in a couple of weeks, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter will be with us here in just a moment.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports. Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else. Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson, Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum, and Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Miss one episode and you miss the game.
Support for programming comes from Pinnacle Bank, where serving customers beyond day-to-day transactions is the Texas way. Pinnacle Bank provides solutions based on local needs and personal relationships. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at pinnbanktx.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and our next segment is being powered by our friends at Pinnacle Bank. The way banking should be, go to their website at pinnbanktx.com. And as always, in our next Under the Helmet segment, our very favorite Nebraska Cornhusker, Jason Peter, is with us, who I've got to start out our conversation by giving you some props because you were spot on last week on our program, just talking about, you know, all the uncertainty within the Big 12 Conference. And you said it. It starts at the top, and it starts with leadership. We certainly have heard a lot about the commissioner, Dan Beebe. Your thoughts, Jason?
Well, it's sad. It really is. For as much as I like to pat myself on the back, when you look at the situation, it's sad because you have so many great football games whether rivalries in particular. I mean, the Nebraska-Oklahoma game, and even though it hasn't been played every single year, I think for a lot of people, when they think great college football rivalry, it's either Michigan-Ohio State or Nebraska and Oklahoma, and a lot of people tend to side with Nebraska-Oklahoma just because it was played right around Thanksgiving. But you also have the Oklahoma-Texas game, and all of this stuff was at jeopardy, and pretty much because one guy, Dan Beebe, was in Texas's back pocket. And I know Texas, they're kind of the sexy pick on the outside, with the following that they have and the money that they have and the revenue that they earn. It would be easy if you were a commissioner to say, oh, I'm going to stick with these guys. But unfortunately, when you're the conference commissioner, you can't take one school and say, I'm going to ride this school, especially when that school has already destructed a conference prior to joining the Big 12. But when the University of Oklahoma comes out and says, we'll stay in the conference as long as Dan Beebe steps down, that says a lot. It really does. And that's all I needed to hear, because I talk about it all the time with Nebraska and Oklahoma, and I really do think that Nebraska would have stayed in the conference if they had continued to make Nebraska-Oklahoma an annual game. Well, the annual game for the Big 12 has been Texas and Oklahoma. So for Oklahoma to come out and say that, I think that kind of is a good indication as to how unlevel I think the playing field really was in terms of the administration and all that stuff when everything landed back on the desk of Dan Beebe.
Well, and you know, we've heard so much about just the perception that Dan Beebe, he was just a puppet for Texas. I mean, especially, you know, what happened with the Longhorn Network. But I have to ask you, you know, as you just kind of look over and reflect on the Big 12 Conference, which was formed in, what, 96, you had your first commissioner in Steve Hatchell, which I personally think did a great job. Then you had Kevin Weiberg, now Dan Beebe. I mean, when are they ever going to get it right on who's going to be the commissioner? How in the world do you finally stabilize the Big 12 Conference?
You go back and you find a guy who used to run the Big 8.
There you go.
I know what they've done here. We're hearing that Chuck Ninus, who was a Big 8 commissioner, and I know he's been enjoying, I guess, the Rocky Mountains, I believe, out in Boulder as running a headhunter-type firm. But from what we've heard, he's going to be the next guy to come in. And whether it's an interim basis or a permanent, I'm sure that remains to be seen. But it sounds like they're going to go back to some of the Big 8 roots. And they should, because it wasn't those Big 8 schools joining the four schools from the Southwest Conference. It was those four schools from the Southwest joining the Big 8 Conference. And I know, and this, I'm not taking any of the blame off of Dan Beebe, because ultimately he was the guy in charge, but the other schools, when they formed the Big 12, they're to blame for this as well. You know, there were a lot of things that, when they were voting on the rules for the Big 12 Conference, they could have, I think, changed this. If you rewound it back to 1995, the year prior to them forming the conference, and I think a lot of the things that they voted on, and not to go over all of them again, but I know I mentioned them last week, just with dropping all of the Big 8 records and not having any remembrance, I think, of the conference, different things, the Prop 48, you know, the academically ineligible kids, and there was just a lot of things, I think, that these other schools could have ultimately changed the outcome of where we are now. But, no matter what they say, they're talking about Air Force and BYU. It's just not going to be the same. There just aren't many quality football programs out there. I mean, when you're talking about the Oklahomas, the Nebraskas, the Texases, I mean, this is a handful of schools' programs. You can bring in a BYU, and it's all right. You know, it's not the worst school, it's not the worst program in the world, but you're not bringing in a real showstopper there. I mean, nobody looks at BYU and says, well, they may be able to put together a national championship year again. You know, that was a long time ago when Ty Detmer was running the show out there, and they had quarterbacks like Jim McMahon and those guys. But I don't know who you're going to bring in that ultimately could kind of rebuild this conference. I think at this point probably most of the big schools, the Oklahomas and the Texases, no matter what they say at this point, I think they're going to be having some conversations and some phone calls maybe under the radar with some other conference commissioners to see, hey, if we leave, will you take us?
Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. He's looking into his crystal ball of all the conference expansion, giving us his insight. I am just kind of curious. So suppose, hypothetically, they finally get the Big 12 conference stabilized. They got this new leadership. You're talking about this guy out of the former Big 8 conference. Why don't you, Nebraska Cornhuskers, circle the wagon again and come on home? Come on, JP.
Yeah, that you never rule anything out. I don't know how that would look to fans around the country and to Nebraska fans. I think there was probably a few of them that weren't really enthusiastic about making the jump to the Big Ten. But I think now that we're here and now that we're getting into Big Ten season, I think people are excited for some of these schools with those deep roots and tradition and the history. So they're excited for the Ohio State and the Michigans come into town. So never say never, but right now I think that Nebraska's happy where they are.
I had to throw that out there. We'll take you guys back, open arms, Jason. So, okay,
if they made Nebraska-Oklahoma an annual game again, maybe I would lend my vote of support.
Okay, let's do a quick recap. Talk to us about where your team is, your Nebraska Cornhuskers, defensively, because you had quite a bone to chew on last week as far as what they were doing in terms of their execution.
Yeah, it hasn't been great, and ironically, it's the defensive side of the ball where everybody's up in arms, because this is what Bo does. I mean, he's a defensive guy, and really, since he's got here, there have never been any issues, but they're having problems stopping the run, and when you can't stop the run and an offense is two-dimensional, it's going to be a long day, and ultimately, that's the number one thing that goes up on the chalkboard when you're preparing for this week's game. As a defense, the number one thing is shut down the run. And Washington put together a game plan similar as to Fresno State, and they were able to take advantage of some running plays. And it's not trick running plays. It's not like they're trying to fool the Nebraska defense. They're pretty much lining up and they're running counters and they're running power G's and traps and they're running right at the heart of Nebraska's defense and they're having a hard time stopping it. So, you know, ultimately when you got to then commit more guys to the run, then it weakens you in the secondary. And they're a very, very young secondary. They're without their All-American Alfonso Dennard, who hopefully they'll get back here before going up to Madison to play Wisconsin, but you got a young group of kids back there, and they're struggling right now. And it'll be interesting to see. I still am 100% behind Bo, especially in terms of the defense, but ultimately, you know, you'll get through Wyoming this week, but when you got to go then up to Camp Randall and play a team that's got offensive linemen that go 320, 330 across the board, and they're going to pound the ball at you, it's going to be a whole nother ball game compared to the Fresno States and the Tennessee Chattanoogas.
Only about 60 more seconds this weekend with Jason Peter on our program. And, of course, you just mentioned it. You guys are on the road at Wyoming. What do you think will be the keys that perhaps that you had said that, you know, Coach Pelini has been really emphasizing with his team?
Yeah, I think he just, you know, he's hoping that they don't get discouraged. I mean, you got to keep your confidence level up. I'm sure he, ultimately, it doesn't matter if you have a freshman or a senior playing, they have to play up to a certain level and a certain standard. You know, you're not going to get a Wyoming team that's got, you know, 10, 12 players that are going to the NFL next year. This is a team that you should be able to go up and you should be able to execute. You're going on the road, but it's not like you're going to go into a hostile environment. I mean, a packed house up there in Laramie is 30,000. So the quarterback will still be able to make his checks and audibles, and there shouldn't be any problems with communication. But it's good for them, I think, to go on the road and for some of these young players to experience a road trip
right
before they go up to Madison and play a game for real.
It is the perfect road game, as you were talking about, as you guys get prepared even to endure this very tough conference schedule. Jason, thanks so much for dropping by. We'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks, E.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Prentice Lewis, TCU's head women's volleyball coach, will be joining us here in just a moment.